Our next guest is Justin Zaruba. He is from New York City and is currently a fiction MFA candidate here at KU. He has an extensive lava collection. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you for having me.
So you're going to be reading us today some fiction. Is there any preamble or setup or context that you want to give the listeners before you get started?
Yes. Well, Cam, the story is written first person from a 18-year-old girl's point of view. So as I read it, she will sound very much like a man because I'm a man. But I tried to find a girl that would potentially read this. That way we could try to simulate the experience of this being first person from a woman. But I couldn't find anybody who would be willing to do that. So I'm just going to read it in the best girl voice that I have.
Awesome. And is this is from a longer work, right? It's a novel, correct?
It's a novel that I've already written, or I said written a couple times, but like every time like trying to improve the draft. This is currently the third draft of it. So.
And is there a title or is it a working title?
Working title that has changed 17 different times. But right now it's called Keyword Penelope.
Okay.
Because the main character's name is Penelope, and she's a girl.
She's a girl, guys. So whenever you're ready.
Great. Unfortunately, the best place to start this whole story is with my cousin Nikki. I say unfortunately because Nikki isn't even important. He's just where things started, and he's a colossal dumbass. Nikki thought he was some suave New York gangster because our family had a history of suave New York gangsters. But in those old black and white pictures, those guys actually looked the part. Classy, well-defined, and confident. Nikki was none of those things. He screwed up everything he touched. He wore these stupid-looking tracksuits that he'd leave unzipped down his chest to show off his gold chains and wisps of what I guess you'd call chest hair. He would drench himself in cologne, grease back his hair, was pretty much gross all the time. His only redeeming quality, and this is a stretch, is that he sold weed. So that's how he ended up in Brooklyn Heights, scaling 6 flights of stairs in this run-down apartment building. The elevator had snapped a cable years ago, and the landlord was too cheap to fix it. Most of the apartment doors in his building stayed open a crack, only as far as the chain would let them open. The apartment dwellers did this so they could hear when someone came up the stairs, then they could run to the door and see if it was trouble. You'd walk down the hallway with all these doors open a crack, and you'd feel all these eyes watching you from the darkness. It was a horrible place for an 18-year-old girl to walk around alone, but I met pepper spray handy if necessary. This was the nature of Nikki's neighborhood, and I had to deal with it. This was their domain, and I was the outsider. Nikki lived in 6F. His door was open, and his eyes were already peeking at me. Frank Sinatra blared from inside his apartment. I had already texted him and told him I was coming over, so he probably had a good idea it was me when he heard the stairs. I got to the door, but he kept the chain in place and peered through the 2 inches of space. "I am going to let you in," he said. I said, "Well, that's good. But you can't tell anyone about what you see in here." "That's a really weird thing to say." "It's not weird," he said. "It's just... I've got an operation going on in here, and you can't tell anyone." "Dude, whatever you're doing in there, I literally don't give a care. I just want to buy some weed." He thought about that, nodded, then closed the door. He slid off the chain, opened up, and rushed me into his dark apartment. "Go, go, go, quick, quick, quick." The only light came from a series of lava lamps positioned on end tables and in windowsills. The carpet felt sticky and reeked of cat piss. That went hand in hand with the 7 cats looming under the table and behind the trash bags. Then there were these dripping stains on the wall that could have only come from chucking full cans of beer. He had a 70s couch, yellow and scratchy, but you couldn't sit on it because he had all these cardboard boxes stacked on it. The boxes wouldn't have seemed out of place, really, but they had all these fast food logos on them, like McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts and KFC. That was more weird than usual. But I just kept reminding myself, don't ask any questions, don't talk to Nikki about anything, just get your weed and get out. "See, check this out." He went for the KFC boxes and dug his hands inside. He pulled out armloads of clear plastic packages. "It's all biscuits." "Why do you have boxes of biscuits?" I asked. Then I immediately squinted my eyes. Sorry that I asked. "I've been stealing them." He rooted through the next box. "I've been stealing all kinds of stuff." Nikki explained that he'd been going out at night, breaking into all these fast food chains and stealing buns and hamburger patties and cups and napkins. He had a couple people, he called them buyers, who were in the market for exactly that kind of thing. I told him I didn't care. I didn't want to know. I just wanted to buy some weed and just get going. But he insisted on showing me the hamburger patties he stole. It was so unsanitary because they were stored on his couch instead of in a freezer. I picked up a whole plastic bag of hamburger patties to check them out. They were completely room temperature and the bag drizzled blood from the seams. This, I informed him, is really gross. He says, they're fine. He grabbed the bag from me and threw it back in the box. You just don't get it. You don't see the big picture. Oh, I get the big picture. You have rotting meat on your couch and you probably have a huge rat problem. He crossed his arms. Stupid, that's why I have the cats. Nikki wasted an entire hour talking to me about this underground fast food thieving nonsense before he finally got around to the subject of selling me pot. And that's when I got super pissed because after all that time, after commuting all the way to Brooklyn, after a painful hour of listening to him go on and on about the baller cash he made on a box of hash browns, he finally tells me he doesn't even sell pot anymore. Are you freaking kidding me? I spat. I came all the way down here because you said you could hook me up. I can hook you up, he said. I just don't sell it, but I know a guy who does. Well, why didn't you just text me his name? I didn't have to come over for this. Because, Penelope, I didn't know if you were a detective. He slumped down on the floor and ripped a corner of cardboard off one of the boxes. Then he started sketching a map on it. I told him I didn't need a map. I had a phone. If he just gave me the address, I could GPS it and be on my way. But Nikki says this dude didn't have an address, which actually isn't all that uncommon in New York. Dealers won't deal out of their house. They like to stick to corners and alleyways, so you just have to know where to go to look for a guy. So he draws me this map for Chinatown and he hands it to me. The guy has a Chinese name. He spells it X-I-N, but you pronounce it Shin. He's a little weird, but he's cool, and his weed is killer. So now, instead of weed, I've got a piece of cardboard that smells like wet meat and the name of some dude from Chinatown. That's how dumb Nikki was. He tried to reopen the conversation about this jar of pickles he stole from IHOP, and I immediately went for the door. Hey, he called out. I turned back around and he pointed all around his apartment. Tell no one what you saw here. Tell no one about your crime spree for black market sausage. I'll try to keep it on the DL. And that was it. I don't usually sigh when I leave someone's presence, but I literally sighed and thought, thank Christ that's over. Then I left his building, running the gauntlet of creepers, watching me through their half-open doors. If you're not familiar with New York, I should mention that Chinatown and Little Italy overlap and blur into each other. I lived with my mother in Little Italy, right on the corner of Grand and Mulberry. We lived in a pretty nice apartment building with Il Vicino's on the main floor. I lived there my whole life, so I knew every store and alleyway in Little Italy. I had a good grasp on Chinatown, too. Ma didn't like Chinese food, so we never ate it when I was little, but when I got old enough to have my own money, I started skateboarding to Chinatown for lo mein or egg rolls. The point I'm trying to make is that I'd skateboard from Little Italy to Chinatown a bajillion times. I knew all the alleyway shortcuts. I knew which lights took forever. I'm looking at you, Mulberry and Canal Street. And most importantly, I knew Super Wash Dry Clean and the Asian Food Market. That's where Nikki told me to go. The two stores were smack dab in the middle of the block, and Nikki drew an alley between them. I remembered an alley being there, but it dead-ended, and I never went down it before. This was early June, the summer after my high school graduation. This was a big deal to me, because this wasn't just a summer vacation. Summer vacation means you have to go back to school. This was the summer of freedom. It was going to be a great summer. All I needed was some weed. I followed Nikki's map, skated down to Chinatown, tearing down the sidewalks at top speed. I always listened to music on my iPhone to drown out the noise of traffic and the day, and so I was singing along to the Get Up Kids. I zipped around slow-moving pedestrians. I blazed right through the stoplights and crosswalks. I stopped waiting for crosswalks years ago when I came to the realization that no one wanted to hit an 18-year-old girl, even if she was crossing illegally. How I saw it, the taxi cabs and buses would sooner slam on their brakes and cause a fender bender than kill someone. I had some close calls skating through traffic. Once I actually felt a car's side-view mirror brush the back of my t-shirt. Another time, this car went past me so close that I could smell the lady driver's perfume. So I'm skating down the sidewalks in Mulberry, I have my music on full blast, and I'm checking this little piece of cardboard drawn in Sharpie. I skated up to this group of people waiting on the light to change so they could cross the street, and I'm like, screw that, I'm not waiting on a stupid light. I just built up speed and shot right into heavy traffic. Now, I just want to be clear that this might sound dumb, but I've done this a million times before without a scratch. So I get into the same street, swerved behind a city bus and weaved between a taxi and an SUV. It was like a game of Penelope Frogger. I got 5 feet from the curb, and that's when I got hit by a freaking taxi. It pretty much came out of nowhere. I heard the squealing tires, then the horn, but all that came in the split second it took for me to turn my head. I had just enough time to think, ah, crap. and then this splitting pain rushed through my hip bones. I remember being airborne for a second, flew probably 20 feet, and then I landed hard on the concrete. A few seconds went by where all I could do was just lay on the ground. My eyes were all blurry, I couldn't think straight, but that only lasted for a few seconds. I realized I wasn't dead, and that came as quite a comfort. I sat up and checked myself for any serious injuries. I had one black Chuck Taylor still on my foot. The other one flew off, so I had one shoe and one black and white striped sock. I felt my legs. They didn't feel broken. My jeans were dirty from sliding on the concrete, but they weren't torn or anything. I pulled my iPhone out of my pocket, and that's when I got hot pissed. I landed on my phone, and it was totally wrecked. The screen shattered, and the case had a crack right down the back of it. It's not a thing you can get fixed at a store, and I didn't have insurance. I remember looking at my phone, and that's when I noticed the blood. I followed it up my hand, past my wrist to my arm. All the skin on my right arm was road rashed all to hell, covered in blood and gravel. It looked hardcore. Still, it sucked because I got blood all over my Decemberist shirt. I wasn't even that huge of a Decemberist fan anymore, but the shirt was really soft, and I liked it. Now one side was all shredded and soaked in blood, which, one could argue, made it look even more punk rock. And I'd have to agree, I still wear that shirt sometimes. Blood covered my right hand. My left hand was fine, so I rubbed my face with my left hand to check to see if my face was bloody, and it was fine too. I checked my skull, ran my hand through my short black hair. Again, no blood, but plenty of leaves and little sticks. I looked like a real mess. I stood up and tried to brush myself off. My hip hurt like you wouldn't believe, but it wasn't broken because I could put weight on it. That's when this Middle Eastern dude runs up to me and he's shouting like, "Your fault, your fault, your fault," and I just ignored him. Maybe it was my fault, maybe it wasn't. I didn't have the patience for a big he said, she said argument. My phone was busted, I was pissed, and I still needed to find my skateboard. But this dude followed me and yelled at me. Let me tell you about the skateboard. This board was slick. Ma got it for me when I was 12, against her better judgment, she said, and I rode it ever since. I have this awesome collection of band stickers all over it, like Neutral Milk Hotel and a Stella Star sticker, stuff like that. I spent years collecting stickers and putting them on that board. Plus, once, I ordered these sweet neon red spinneret wheels for it that glowed in the dark. It was more than just a skateboard, it was a little piece of me. I found half of it in the street. The back half rested on the sidewalk. The wheels were still spinning on it. That's how fast all this happened. I went from hot pissed to full volcano mode. I could get a new phone, who cares, but I couldn't replace that board. That board was one of a kind, completely personalized by me. I picked up both pieces, just totally dumbfounded, and held them in my hands by the wheel assemblies. "I want insurance," the Middle Eastern dude yelled at me. He had his hand out. "Insurance now." I held up my arms, skateboard parts in my hands, and let him get a good look at me. He's like, "Dude, do I look like I have any insurance?" "You stay here." He pointed at me and then at the ground. He took out his phone, and I knew he was calling the police. I didn't want to deal with the police. "Dude, screw you," I shouted. "Screw to me, screw to you." And we argued like that for a while. Screw to me, screw to him. He called me a horrible person, and I called him a huge jerk. At one point, he physically touched me. He grabbed my arm or something, and that's when I just went ballistic. I started bashing his windshield with the chunks of my skateboard. I got 3 good smashes in before he tried to stop me, again by touching me, so that's how I ended up running in circles around his taxi. He chased me in circles. The whole time, I just kept hitting his cab with my skateboard. He tried to take a swing at me, and I kicked at his legs. His taxi had passengers in the back, a horrified out-of-town couple who, categorically, had no idea what the hell was happening. That's when I heard sirens, so I bolted. I wasn't about to get a ticket or go to jail, and I definitely wasn't going to be on the hook for the repair bill for that guy's car. By the time the cops showed up, I was already blocks away.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I've read a little more of this novel and heard a little bit more of this novel, but for the listeners out there, you know, this is just the beginning. Could you give a little dust jacket copy or teaser for what the book as a whole is about?
Yeah, this progressively gets more and more fiction, science fiction, fantasy science fiction, as she starts to meet voodoo gods and living weather patterns and a Pegasus and princesses from a fairy tale world. And slowly as the book goes on, it descends into just almost absurd fantasy. I mean, modern fantasy. I mean, it's set in New York. I would say fantasy. Like, it's not like swords and dragons and whatever else. I don't want to give the false impression that that's what it's about.
I mean, Pegasuses are okay, but once you bring dragons in the mix, come on, right?
Well, I mean, well, the Pegasus is okay as long as it's like flying over New York City or something.
Okay. And you know, I know you've been working on this for a while, but speculative fiction, fantasy, science fiction, are these things that you've been generally, you know, working on, you know, for the whole time of your MFA?
In my undergrad, they sort of frowned on science fiction or fantasy or anything like that. They wanted to produce literature, and they wanted you to... So I wrote a lot of it in my undergrad. I don't regret doing that. It's not what I wanted to do, but I think it was a good experience, and it was a good avenue to learn the fundamentals of fiction. Ever since coming to the University of Kansas for my master's and having that freedom to really write whatever you want, I've been able to draw on that knowledge from attempting to write literature, and now I use it to attempt to write speculative fiction.
And is that one of the things that drew you to KU? I know that there's a lot of folks who are interested in science fiction.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, the fact that it was... the faculty was involved in that genre was very intriguing. And then also, it was the only school that accepted me. So that had a hand in it, too. I'd say it's a 50-50 split between those two things, then.
You don't need to tell anyone that. You can just say, yeah, it was the science fiction, man. That was that's the thing.
No. But did you hear the part about how I only got accepted into one school and this was it? Because I just want to make sure that...
What... Are there books that are, you know, have inspired you in maybe just fantasy and science fiction in general, or, you know, even more so in this kind of genre of urban fantasy? Do you read a lot of this kind of stuff?
I definitely do, but the interesting thing, well, it was at least interesting to me, is that this type of stuff typically only happens in comic books, which is what I read the most of. But in the Marvel comics that I read, Ares, the Greek god of war, actually exists and, you know, joins the Avengers. And, well, it's the same with, like, Hercules and a couple other gods. But, I mean, you definitely get some... It's very surreal. I mean, some of the comic books can be. And the only other thing I can think that I would even potentially try to list as an inspiration would be, like, Douglas Adams, like Hitchhiker's Guide. Again, it doesn't take itself too seriously, but there's still a story happening there and with some social commentary that, but yeah, it's not trying to be anything more than what it is.
Are there any, you know, for, if we can nerd out for a second.
Please nerd out. I love nerding out.
Do you have like a graphic novel, like recommendation for someone now, like not just like, oh, you read the Avengers, but like, if you wanted to say that, like a specific arc or whatever, or not Avengers, anything.
I mean, the thing is that and not to, you know, laud myself too heavily, but I mean, I know enough about that genre that before I even recommended a comic book, I would like ask them, I would qualify like what it is that they really liked. If you really, really like space or like dimensional travel or time travel, that kind of thing, like the Fantastic Four by Hickman was really, really successful and it was brilliant and went on for the longest time. And if you like political, like guns and border disputes and stuff like that, and we like Captain America stuff. The thing about the great thing about it is that the comic books span a whole bunch of different genres, and there's, you know, political thriller and science fiction and almost a fantasy elements. Like Thor is very fantasy based. It has that feel to it. And I, as far as like recommending one, I feel like there would be a recommendation where everybody could find something that they would like in that, I wouldn't even say genre, in that medium.
So you're declining to answer this question.
the question was, would I recommend something?
Just give a recommendation, you know, like, hey, like I really like.
I don't think that there's one graphic novel that everyone will enjoy, though. I think there is a graphic novel for everyone, but there's not one graphic novel for everyone. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Hey, you see the new Daredevil Netflix trailer?
No, I actually have not. That's the one preview I haven't seen yet.
It just came out 2 days ago. Yeah. It's kind of good.
No, I'm really excited for that. And like the Jessica Jones stuff, like the whole series of it, because they're doing Daredevil,
four
Jessica
or five,
Jones.
Yeah. Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
And Iron Fist.
And then the Defenders.
Yeah, and then when they're done with that, they're all going to come together and be the Defenders. And then I'm almost certain that they'll end up using them. And like when they do Avengers 3, Part 1 and 2 in 2018 and 19, those people will be involved in it too, because they're going to need everybody they can to bring down Thanos.
You took it there. All right.
I know you've taken classes in poetry and playwriting, and you took a mixed genre class. Yeah. Do those help you? It sounds like your project goes from a more, well, I hate to say realistic, but more realistic to a fantasy mm-hmm. level. How does taking classes in different genres help you write?
You know, one of the things that I set out to do that I ended up not doing with the book was I wanted when she left Earth and went to, say, like she went to Mount Olympus, I wanted to write it as though it were, write it Homeric. Right. Like do like a kind of poetry thing with it. But then I started to think that would potentially alienate my intended audience. I mean, it's kind of a nerdy thing to do, but maybe a little taking it too far. I did attempt it and I thought that I had executed it relatively well. So it's nice to know that that's an option because I've practiced in poetry that I could do that kind of thing. But, I guess it would just, maybe I'll save that, put that on the back burner and try that some other day. Like, when I have the when I have the clout to do something experimental with it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Was it actually in, Tim, I don't know anything about poetry. Tell me, what in like meter, like whatever, you know, like with a certain number of beats and stuff per line?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I have obviously a copy of the Iliad and the Odyssey and stuff, and I sat down and then quite frankly, just Wikipedia'd it. And I was like, what is the rhyme and meter and, you know, for the Iliad and for the Odyssey and what were... you know, what's characteristic of Homeric poems and stuff. And Wikipedia told me, so I just did it that way.
So meter is the right word?
Yeah.
My 10th grade English teacher is proud.
I couldn't tell you what the meter were for those two, though.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on,
Justin. Thanks for having me, guys.
And reading. It was fun.
I had the time of my life.